Today's episode is brought to you by Harper Perennial, an imprint of HarperCollins Publishers. The author of Love Buzz follows her acclaimed first novel with a delightful Caribbean-set romp about video game designer Sloane Cooper, who has a strategy for everything. Almost. Against her better judgment, Sloane says yes to going on a Caribbean vacation with her neighbor. She thinks she can use the time away to develop a game design that will help her get a job offer. But the question is, can Sloane figure out a way to move past heartbreak, land the job of her dreams, all while avoiding catching feelings? She's up against a lot, y'all. In a Not-So-Perfect World by Neely Tubati Alexander, there is this delightful romantic comedy. There's neighbors and lust, a fake dating scheme, and it also explores the all-too-real demands and costs of female ambition, especially for women working in traditionally male arenas. So make sure to pick up the new book. Thanks again to Harper Perennial, an imprint of HarperCollins Publishers, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by National Geographic Books. So take a second, think to yourself, what is one of the weirdest, but kind of interesting, intriguing, intelligent animals that you know of? If you, like me, think of an octopus, then Secrets of the Octopus by Cy Montgomery is the book for you. It is a beautifully illustrated book that explores the underwater world of the octopus, a creature that resembles an alien life form, but whose behavior has earned it a reputation as one of the most intelligent animals on the planet. This journey into the world of the octopus reveals how large their brains are. They occupy their whole body, not just their heads. They can adjust their genetic makeup to respond to the demands of the environment. So with this book, you can see how the octopus can change shape and color to camouflage themselves more effectively than any other species. They are cool AF. So learn about all of this and more in Secrets of the Octopus. And thanks again to National Geographic Books for sponsoring this episode.
This is the Book Riot Podcast. It's a weekly news and talk show about what's new, cool, and worth talking about in the world of books and reading. We're recording on Thursday, January 27th, 2021. I'm Jeff O'Neill.
It's 2022.
Today joining me, 2022, Vanessa Diaz is joining and correcting me to tell me what year it is. Sitting in for Rebecca, who
Hi.
Is, she's working, but she needed, she's out on the coast. She's taking a breather, a non-podcast friendly environment. So said
yes.
Good wishes to Rebecca and, well, all of our mental health, but Rebecca especially is trying to keep her head screwed on semi-straight, you know, maybe just askew, not all the way backwards.
Just aligned.
Point, Vanessa, we got a lot to talk about today, but before we do that, a couple of plugs for other things. First, the winter preview draft window is closing. So yep. Rebecca and I decided that we will keep voting open until February 10th. February 10th is the last time you go to bookriot.com/winter draft. There'll be a link in the show notes, and you can go do that. I should say the voting is close enough that a few votes can matter. So get your votes in. You can listen to what Rebecca and I talk about the books that not some we were looking forward to, some we were shamelessly pandering for votes, and then some we just wanted to talk about for a few minutes. I've already talked about some of the ones. I'm also listening right now. I started How to Be Perfect by Michael Schur, which was on Rebecca's list, and it's delightful on audio, and I wish I would have picked it, but there we go. And we're going to continue, Rebecca and I are going to continue to talk about some of the books that we're going to read together in Frontlist Corner. I'm going to drag Vanessa into this problem project here in a minute. Speaking of things I've dragged Vanessa into, though in all fairness, you dragged yourself into the most recent episode of Adaptation Nation, which was The Tragedy of Macbeth, directed and written for the screen by Joel Coen. Starring Denzel and Francis. If you say Francis, do we know who we're talking about? I feel like maybe not. It's not distinctive enough. Do
you
we
literally
know who we're
just
talking about if you just say Francis?
I was gonna say you just did the inside of my brain where I was like Denzel, yes, Francis. I'm like, say the last name. Like in my head, that's why I was going, like, all hail Queen Francis. But I think you got to say.
Yeah, McDormand. And we had a wonderful time. It's the most recent episode of Adaptation Nation where we talk about The Thing and then watch The Thing, or we read The Thing, watch The Thing, and then talk about The Thing with a little guy named Billy Shakes. May have heard of him. And Sharif Williams and Jed Nordenstein, we just had a wonderful time. I'd say we just had a great time. Amanda wasn't there, but she was sort of the witch in abstention. But Vanessa, yes. We had a good time, right?
Oh, yeah. It was. You know, it's going to be a good time when you like sign up to do more work. And
yes,
I did. Like, we volleyed. We normally don't have that many people on a podcast. And we were like, no, we're going to do this because we're very passionate. And it was great. It was just a lot of fun to talk about. Bunch of Billy Shakespeare nerds in a room.
Yeah, it was really good. And the movie is good. It's out now on Apple TV. It's worth watching if you like Shakespeare at all. You know, I'd spent some time in Denzel Land because then Amanda and I had done Pelican Brief before, which was Denzel and Julia Roberts and what most people consider sort of the 90s equivalent of a B-movie political thriller as these things go, though I really like it. And in my research for that movie, something came up that I then forgot to mention in the Scottish Play one, which is I'm jokingly referring to because, as some of you know, it's bad luck to say Macbeth in a theater. In a podcasting is theater of the mind, Vanessa, so I think it applies here.
Absolutely.
That Denzel got a start in Shakespeare. He was discovered in a production of Coriolanus, which I completely forgot to mention while we were talking about Macbeth. And he's done Lear on Broadway and a bunch of other things, so this is my way of doing follow-up, covering my intellectual ass show title to some degree, to mention that here when I really should have mentioned it on the show before. But you can go find Adaptation Nation wherever you get your podcasts, free and open to the public, as they say. And we're doing a couple more. The next one up, Amanda and Rebecca and I are saddling up for, I'm going to say, the most influential book of the last 10 years, the most influential novel of the last 10 years. And you can hear my argument for that when the time comes. Vanessa, you may know what we're talking about, and you might also already be ready to argue or agree with me, but we got to save that for another time because we're gonna not divulge what that is now. Go check those out. All right, with enough previewing, let's do a quick sponsor break, and we'll get back into it.
Today's episode is brought to you by Where Sleeping Girls Lie by Farida Ebike-Iyamide. And if you recognize the author's name, then you know that she writes Fire, YA, Dark Academia. The last one she wrote, which was TheBomb.com, was Ace of Spades. It was a New York Times bestselling book. So in this new one, a girl new to boarding school discovers dark secrets and cover-ups after her roommate disappears. So the girl, the new girl, is Sade. She goes to this prestigious new boarding school, and on her first night, her roommate Elizabeth disappears and people think that she had something to do with it. So the more Sade investigates Elizabeth's disappearance, the more she realizes there's more to the school and the students that she realized. Secrets lurk around every corner and beneath every surface, secrets that rival even her own. Ooh, twists on twists. You already know what it is. Make sure to pick up the new book. And thanks again to Where Sleeping Girls Lie by Farida Ebike-Iyamide for sponsoring this episode.
All right, Vanessa, I haven't had you on in a while, and it's close enough to the end of the year where I can do things to you, like put you to the torture test of what your favorite book of 2021 was, what books of 22 you're looking forward to. All caveats aside, this is impossible, blah, blah, blah. What do you want to, you put them here. You've got two to shout out. Were those both new releases? I know Ariadne by Jennifer Saint was, so I know that's a new release. So talk about that one first.
I was trying not to do the thing where I messaged you at like a really ridiculous hour to be like, do you mean favorite of 2021 because it came out that year?
It's all fine. It's all fine.
Yes. So that actually probably may have changed my answer. But going with the releases in 2021, just because I don't hear as many people talking about it, Master of Jin by P. Jelly Clark was a phenomenal read, and it's the first full-length novel in the Dead Jinn universe, which is a lot of fun. So if you want to, you can read the other two novellas. I did and breezed through them just to kind of get an idea for the world it was set in, which is like a steampunk Cairo. Yes. And then Ariadne, because if it's got mythology in it, I'm probably going to read it.
So that's for all the Circe heads out there, right? Yep. I mean, this is, if you're looking, it's in the same vein. I haven't read this, right?
Yeah, it's great. It's specifically targeted towards people who love Circe, and that is me. So
I'm going to save this for a minute, but I want to put a pin in the Circe, the many children of Circe, or I guess maybe many children of Song of Achilles, technically, because that book did well enough that Madeline Miller got another book. Mm-hmm. But then Circe is now an a fish TikTok phenomenon, and by being a fish TikTok phenomenon, you're a fish book phenomenon. And do the follow-on books have any TikTok coattails? Are people is the algo serving people Ariadne takes on TikTok right now?
I haven't seen Ariadne. I spend an absurd amount of time on TikTok lurking. Like, I barely ever create anything, but it's mainly for, like, food. But I am definitely now looped into the book talk. And I haven't seen as much talk about Ariadne, but, like, you'd have to close your eyes and put your fingers in your ears to not stumble across, in particular, Song of Achilles talk. So I don't know if it'll catch up or not, but, it's... I haven't seen it.
Yeah, let's save our TikTok discussion because I think it's warranted to this 2021 bestsellers here in a minute. But I think this idea of how top heavy TikTok phenomenon seemed to be and whether or not there's anything people can do or the phenomenon's there. But Ariadne would seem an interesting test case, right? It looks like Circe.
It does.
It sounds like Circe. It looks like it reads like Circe. Now, just because it's a coat tailor doesn't mean it should or, you know, historically, I guess the history of... a book that I'm thinking about for no reason whatsoever, say Gone Girl, just to pick one at total random, Vanessa.
Sure.
Right? We got Girl on the Train was a coat tailor that picked up.
Yep.
But there haven't been a ton of number one bestsellers on the bestseller list for 21 week Gone Girl things. Now, there's been a lot have been successful, but nothing has reached the heights of Gone Girl. So maybe it's an unfair comparison. But what we're really trying to gauge, I guess, still, and publishing is doing this because I'm in marketing meetings, I'm talking to people in publishing, and they're trying to figure out what, if anything, can be done with TikTok's enormous power to move units outside of put out books that you think are good and hope they get picked up, because they can move units, but it's not clear that they move anything other than the three Colleen Hoover books, Sarah J. Maas, and the Madeline Millers. And I guess there's Adam Silvera and there's a couple others thrown in, but we can name the top 10, but then the next 10, I think, are hard to identify. Do I have this read right in your estimation, your experience so far?
Yeah, I think so.
Anyway, Ariadne, shout that out. Go give a reaction meme video sound effect, Ariadne. I think we get the ball rolling on that. And the other one is, you said it's Steampunk Cairo, and that's a new release, but is it a new release or not? I'm sorry.
It is, So Master of Jin is the new release, but the first two novellas that were set in the world will introduce the main character, Fatma, the investigator. They were introduced in the first novella, which is, oh my gosh, I can't remember the name of it anymore, but they're both, those are backlist. But you don't have to read them all if you don't want to. That's nice.
And then your books to looking forward to. None of these, I don't have any of these on my, Rebecca and I didn't talk about these in Winter Draft. They may not be winter titles, but tell me about some of these. Arsenic and Adobe, I think you talked about before on this show when I asked you a similar question. Is that
might
possible?
Have.
That name rings a bell.
So the thing that's a little bit challenging for me with books in the last year and kind of for the foreseeable future, for those who don't know, is that I'm on the All the Books podcast.
Yes.
So my reading is, because I'm not the liberties of the world who can read a book in 2.5 hours, is that so much of my reading is driven by specifically what's coming out the week that I'm on a show.
Reading ahead for a specific, it's a rally, not a race, Vanessa.
Yeah,
and rally point.
Absolutely use audiobooks to try to kind of get to backlist stuff, but it is so driven by that particular literal date on the calendar. So I was I'm gonna think of some ones that I feel like maybe don't have as much buzz around them, or that maybe, anyway, so that's why I picked Homicide in Hollow Hollow is the sequel to Arsenic and Adobo, which I think Amanda and I have both talked about.
Maybe it was Amanda. I can't remember. I've heard this before. Someone's talking.
We're both big stand girls for this series. It is a cozy mystery, which is great. But for anybody who reads that genre, it's hella white. And we're finally seeing people of color get to break into that genre, specifically the foodie ones. So this one is Filipino inspired, which I think is amazing, or Philippine. That's a sequel. Cartographers by Peng Shepherd is one that's getting a decent amount of buzz.
Yeah, it is a little bit. What is that about? I don't remember.
It's funny because I actually know very little about it on purpose, except that it is being billed for, I think this one is actually set in it's obviously cartographer, so it's got I think an ancient map maker mystery, and it's billed as being in the vein of, the 24-hour bookstore. Why is the title escapes me? Mr.
Penumbra's
24-hour bookstore. Yes. Yeah. So that plus map making is sort of what I'm getting from
I'm
super in.
Yep. Cool.
And then,
Billy
Shakes.
So Shakes, speaking of the guy.
Yeah.
You may have ever heard of him?
There's a remake of Romeo and Juliet coming out, which is probably all I love me some Romeo and Juliet, but this one is set in San Diego with a Mexican chef, and it's around a taco business. So it's put that in my veins. So that too is one of my books that I'm looking forward. I'm about to listen to it as soon as we get off this
call. Are any of these out, or are you reading for April? See, people who listen, many of you probably listen to Liv and her rotating band of merrymakers on all the books. The thing you have to understand, the thing that Vanessa and the rest of y'all have to do, it reminds me of like the Tour de France a little bit, where, you know, the Team Italy has the dude or whoever that's going to win, and then the rest of the team is there to help them out on like the mountain day. And you're there, and you just are there to be part of a team. You can't do what the lead is doing. None of us can do what Lib do. All we can do is and I don't do this because I can't even keep with the view that are trying to keep up, is give a quick inning of relief pitching. Now I'm mixing my sports metaphors, so I'm really out of my depth. So you got, I'm there, I'm going to show up for this day. So what's your next appearance? Do you have it on your calendar? What's your next time you got to carb load?
I think we'll be recording next week on Friday, so it'll be like the Tuesday after that, whatever that is. Yeah, so it's coming up pretty shortly here.
So these books are, the books you're reading for the episode are either, they're going to be coming out that week. So pretty soon enough that people could have put on their list.
I think these
that's
are all
cool. And then,
winter or spring.
And then things you've read recently. I've heard, don't spoil it for me, but I've heard some stuff about the ending of Walhalla by Nikki May. Don't spoil it for me, but I need more than this ellipsis you have here. I need a little more meat on the bone than that.
It is a phenomenal book. If you haven't heard of it, Walhalla by Nikki May. And the thing I do absolutely feel like I need to say to anybody who asks me about this is that I don't agree with the comps that are given for this book. It is, everywhere you read, it's comped to Sex and the City. And I think that is, and this is, again, no disrespect in case the author was the one who came up with this, but I just don't agree. Right. I think it's a really, it does the book a disservice. There's four women, but what else? It's the story's basically about these four women, and really, really short, non-spoilery version is just that as their lives progress, like three of them are core best friends, and now there's like this other interloper who's entered the group who is putting some cracks in this foundation of their friendship through some interesting ways. And you're watching that happen, like, as the omniscient person, but, you know, each of these women is being affected by this fourth person, and it's building up in tension. You see all these, like, really, really big things happening. And then you realize there's very little left of the book. And a bunch of stuff. And then you get this ending, and every single person I've talked to has been like, no, but wait. Like, did I interpret it correctly? Did this thing happen? Did this all get wrapped up this way? Did I misinterpret how that went down? And it's, so that's the part. I still think it's a really, really interesting exploration of women's choices, of friendship, of like what feminism means as far as like supporting the decisions other women make, how women of color are impacted in like very white space. Like there's a whole lot of, I think, excellent elements to the book, but I just really wish more people would read this and discuss that ending with me, because I just don't know if I'm like all the way there. Still worth the read. I think you should read it, but yeah.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Want to do one more notable read? You got a couple here. Pick one.
Yeah, pick one. I'll just do the recent holiday anthology that came out then. It's just called Amor Actually. You know, there's holiday romance galore, but it's not, again, often that you see ones that are diverse, and this one's got a really cool lineup of authors, like Soraya Cordova, I think, was the one that edited it. Mia Sosa. I mean, it's this wonderful collection of just Latine authors writing about love, and it was really cool and refreshing to see something like that.
Cool. Okay. Let's see. Let's do one news story that I've. It's more of a. It's interesting. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg's book collection is up for auction right now. Kind of an interesting collection to get law heavy, as you might expect, but. The highest bidding is going for a signed copy of My Life on the Road, which is Gloria Steinem's memoir. Hard to think of. That's like a checker on a checker. Like Steinem's memoir in Ginsburg's collection is the most like mainstream feminist single document I can think
of. Yeah, it sure is.
Is that right? I'm trying to think of another one you could really, really get. Maybe like, I don't know. Hillary Clinton, Sandra Day O'Connor biography, but like Sandra Day O'Connor's Republican, so not quite as attractive. Interesting collection. My question to you here is, if you had a chance to bid on some author's collection, what author are you? Do you want to look through and make a bid on something, Vanessa? I didn't prep you for this. This is a thing I would do to Rebecca. So in order to sit in Rebecca's
equal
chair,
treatment.
You have to just sit there and take a thing like this. Does anyone jump to mind? Or you can take another tack, which is there anyone that would get a higher level of mainstream interest for their book collection right now than Ruth Bader Ginsburg that you can imagine? Now, you don't have to say they're dead or not. Just say they can be alive and put their books up for auction. So we don't want to put the evil eye on anyone, if you hear what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I was having a hard time beating Ginsberg for I want some of the Ginsberg memorabilia from a book perspective.
Yeah, I kind of anticipated I'd be asked something in this realm. Mm-hmm. And
there you listen to the show, Vanessa Diaz.
I do, quite consistently, actually.
Yes.
I honestly had a hard time asking, like, thinking whether or not I'm the kind of person who is going to want to bid on an auction for at least in this kind of money.
I anticipated your anticipation. You've got
right?
10 grand that you can only spend on
okay,
this.
Okay, got it. Okay. Yeah. That is a toughie. I have been known to have too many glasses of mulled wine and walk into a bookstore and buy a rare copy of Agatha Christie in my life.
There you go. Good
so
one.
I like yeah. That's a thing because she's my favorite author, and I am actually kind of on a mission to collect all of her works in interesting ways, like not cheating and, you know.
Are there Spanish language versions that are interesting?
I believe there are,
There might be some interested weird ones that are out there.
That's what I would love to do. I'd love when it's okay again to go travel, obviously back to Mexico, and just find some indie and see if I can find a hella old copy of something like that. A lot of the ones I can think of that would get bigger bids are people I just don't want to mention.
yes,
because they don't. For
no, I hear you.
You
that's
know what
fine.
I'm talking about.
That's fine. Yeah. No, I hear the one.
And that's the big one. I'm sure that that's the case for others, but it's hard to imagine. RBG is such an icon, and the interesting mix of the kinds of books that that get the Gloria Steinem overlap is pretty interesting. I think Toni Morrison could, but I don't know if that's me being a Toni Morrison stan.
That's what I was gonna say. I think the difference here is that these aren't her papers necessarily. These
Indeed.
Are just her. Like
her
on
stuff.
Her shelves, and I'm sure her papers will go to some institute. Most of Morrison's work, I think, is going to Princeton. Already went to Princeton
several years ago.
But in terms of her actual, her copy of, Faulkner, Sound and Fury, that would be a foundational document, right?
Sure.
Clearly, she did her master's thesis on Faulkner, heavily influenced by, took it to new extremes. If she had a special Faulkner, you could say, Morrison's copy of Faulkner is an interesting one. But RBG, she was merchandised, right? Even before she was, you would buy a tote bag with and she became a tote bag, a totem.
Her collar is a thing you can buy.
Yeah, right. Just for a certain kind of normie liberal woman, especially, she's it. She's the Dallas Cowboys of that. I can't come up with a better one. I don't think Hillary Clinton's collection would even fetch the same thing. There's just not as much of a cult is too strong, but Coven maybe is a little weaker, but maybe more descriptive. Maybe someday Michelle Obama or Barack Obama's
I was going to say in the future, King, maybe. Stephen King, just again, going back to culty kind of fan base, maybe. But it's hard to imagine it.
Hard to imagine what else is going to be George R. Martin stuff. It's not there. Anything that has that kind of pop culture, you got to have a pop culture. Now, David Bowie was a big reader. He died a couple years ago.
Are people
into that? I think it's two different fan bases, so you need check on a checker. You need books on books, baby, in order to get the highest kind of bid here. So, long story short, this might be a uniquely, interesting book collection. No one else's. Gloria Steinem's own copy of My Life on the Road is not going to go for $18,000. I guess that maybe tells you everything else you need to know on it. No shade on Gloria. That's just true.
Yeah, part of me wants to start trying to chase down famous people and making other people sign their books and just hold on to that for a long time.
Yeah, right, and then get famous.
Yeah, who can I think of?
So that your heirs can auction off your stuff after the fact. You collect Agatha Christie, you say, and what other notable rare book purchases have you made while, having had a glass and a half of Merlot or something like that?
Yeah, I try to just basically go about doing it so that if I'm in a place I haven't been to, try that bookstore. A lot of the ones I currently have were absolutely purchased when I was in Hay, which is that little bookish town.
Oh, Hay on Wye, right?
Exactly.
Hay on Wye?
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's got something, 30-something bookstores, I think, and a lot of them are secondhand. There was one called, I think, Murder and Mayhem, and so I got a lot of real oldies, the kind that smell in that way and have really terrible advertisements in the back that you can rip off and supposedly send away to get a pocket watch or whatever.
Unbelievable
stuff that. Yeah. I try to make it be kind of rare and interesting places.
Mm-hmm. I have, when I was in grad school, I would troll the Strand for old academic textbooks because they're A, they're really expensive, and B, they go out of print. And we didn't have, I don't know if a lot of the stuff gets captured digitally now, but you could find like a weird old anthology of critical essays on Whitman that, you know, was published in 1974. And if your library didn't have it, there was no way to get that. I kind of missed that because they weren't very expensive because the market for them was very small. And they would then be reference books. I did book collecting in a more serious way when I was younger. I guess as I've gotten older, it's just not when I was spending, you know, then it sits on your shelf and then what? You know the deal. It's like, it's cool and you will like to have it, but wine is enjoyed then and you move on, right? You can do it that way a little bit.
I was at funny, I'm glad you brought that up because when I was reading this piece, like there is a line in there that says like, you know, the thick modern folks are like not book collectors in the same way per se. And I will fully admit that my first reaction was like, ugh. That's not true, but the more I sat with it, like I do think it is. I just don't know that folks are not again for those of you out here to like don't come for us because I know that there's plenty who do, and I obviously just said that I am one of those people. But yeah, the older I get, and I don't know if this is in part like a COVID reaction, but I'm kind of buying into that like drink the good wine now philosophy.
Yeah,
about
there you
things.
Go. Right.
So I'm starting to feel
experience
a little less...
is not things. Exactly. Is a COVID kind of
absolutely.
Mood. For sure. Yeah, we don't have a lot. I mean, for as bookish of a company as we are, especially on the editorial and product side and, you know, this kind of thing that we make, I don't think we have a lot of collectors. Rebecca isn't. She's like galley and galley or die, get it away from me.
Yeah.
Amanda
Kelly
is similar.
A big proponent. Yeah, exactly.
Kelly, yeah. Sharif, I don't think collects.
She has a decent chunk, but yeah, I think it's, you know, she's had to move recently and too was like, yeah, I got to get rid of some stuff. Like,
Right. So anyway, if you're out there and you've got a better bookish auction idea than Ginsberg's collection and notably Ginsberg's copy of Steinem, I would really like to hear that podcast at bookriot.com. All right, we're going to do another sponsor break, and the next segment, we're going to break down 2021's bestsellers by publisher and then by title and why I think this metric is now broken for what books people are actually buying right now. If you've heard Rebecca and I talk about this over time, you know that BookScan is the best way to sell what books are selling, and it is also the worst for this reason. Yeah. That it's really only focused on front list, even if that front list is paperback. Vanessa knows this from being a bookseller, right?
Yep.
That this does not represent what people are buying necessarily. This represents what people are buying that's been released in hardcover in the last 12 months or new in paperback in the last 12 months, except when it comes to kids' books, which is just everything always, anything that's ever been released, because they hate us and they don't want us to understand anything.
And
that's why they
win.
Do it that way. They don't want us to understand what's going on. So when you see what the best-selling book of the month or the week that is in NBD BookScan or Book or Publishers Weekly, that takes out the thing that might actually have been the best-selling thing that week. And the reason we know this, Vanessa, is because the End of Us? What's the Colleen Hoover one with the pink cover that's on TikTok all over the place?
Come on. See it too. And it's,
this is Us, The End of Us, whatever it is. It's something
it's
like
gonna
that.
It's going to come
to me. I don't have
it
off the top of my... Yes, it's going to come to me. We're going to be very angry about it. But that book last week sold 50,000 copies, which is twice what any hardcover fiction or frontlist paperback fiction title sold. And it doesn't appear on any of these lists. And Rebecca and I talked about this when Crawdads dropped off the hardcover fiction list. I was like, wait a minute. Crawdads went from number four to off the list. And what had happened was it was older than a year at that point. It hadn't been released in paperback. The hardcover was older than a year. So what?
It ends with Us. Sorry, it just came to me.
And thank you so much, Vanessa. That's why you're here. Thank you so much. And last week, Colleen Hoover had three books in the top 10 best-selling books of the week in raw numbers, but only one of them appeared on any list in BookScan because, well, not in BookScan, but the way Publishers Weekly and BookScan does this, because Verity was new in paperback. So it got to be there, but it ends with Us, and then there's another one in the middle that I can't remember now.
Me neither.
Doesn't Verity show up here. So what's the point now? I feel like we shouldn't do this anymore. We shouldn't do this. Why are we doing this now? Why are we reporting? Does this serve anyone? My only thought is that maybe publishers want to know of the new releases what's selling.
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. It's like, I think it's in that way.
God, it's so frustrating because like, I think this would be a news story, right? That like, this is a way to get people. It ends with Us. There it is right there. Thank you so much. Reminders of Him is Colleen Hoover's new release, and that's now number one overall. Right.
Wow,
okay. So that's on there because it's a new release in hardcover. Colleen Hoover was the story of last year. And if you read this piece, Vanessa, her name's not on this.
Nope. Nowhere.
So this is invalid. This is nothing. That's my theory.
Now, yeah, you basically have to reread that.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's a bestseller by publisher, but Colleen Hoover's not on there. She's the, I if it's out there, this is another one. I was looking for a Colleen Hoover profile, and I don't think it's out there. Like, it's not out there. She sold 800,000 copies in print alone last year, and there's not a New York Times profile of her at this point. Yeah. A New Yorker thing, a New York Magazine. We don't do this, but if we did profiles, like, I think this is this is the story no one is talking about except people who are like, oh my God, TikTok. But it hasn't bubbled up to this layer, and I feel like there's such a disconnect right now. Again, TikTok, book talk is not everything, but it's enough of a thing
that
you and I are going to talk about this list and not talk about, you know, the 7.5 husbands or whatever. I can never remember what these things are. The Taylor Jenkins Reid, totally not her debut novel. Nope. The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo.
Evelyn Hugo.
Or 7.5. What's 7.5? Or the Court of Thorns and Blood and Bone and Roses series. I can never keep that one straight.
I have a funny story about that.
Yeah, please insert.
It's random, but like so the short version is that I was trying to get our contributors to solicit bookish quotes, right? That's the short version of it. And so I put in an example for them, like at the top, where I just filled in like my name and whatever. And then you had to put the book. So I put A Throne of Socks and Feelings because I was trying to be funny and make up. And I cannot tell you how many DMs I got from people being like, is that a Sarah J. Maas title? Is that her new one coming up? Or like, who's gonna, you know, what who's that by? And I'm like, I made it up.
It's really funny.
Anyway, continue.
There was a meme generator going around of like, if your birthday's in this month and you're, you know,
what street you grew up on or whatever.
What street we're going, insert your nouns to noun of noun and adjective or something like that. Okay, so that's my big rant about how useful these things are. Now, having said that, it's still pretty interesting. I'm only kind of laying in the weeds a little bit here. I didn't give us any kind of more specific where does your eyeball wander to, but do your eyeball wander anything to? Link in the show notes. There's a piece in Publisher Weekly by Liz Hartman where they do a couple things. One is which publishers had the most bestsellers, which for our purposes is maybe the second most or third most interesting thing. I was really looking at the longest running bestsellers, most weeks on the list. So anything there that stood out to you, notable absences, notable presences here?
I'm looking for pleased to see that like Crying in H Mart is on the list. Obviously, Cersei talk about like books that the trade paperback I think made it onto that list.
That's right. That's right. It did. It did make it onto that list.
Yep. Crawdad's obviously on there. I was interested by a Silent Patient by Alex Michaelides is like obviously I know a book that like a lot of people read, but I would have lost the bet about it like still being on this list. And again, trade paperback, so that could be one of the reasons. But I wasn't expecting that at all.
That book sold in hardcover,
The
Maidens came out, and the reason it was on my radar, this is not the kind of book I would normally read, but it had the Maidens had a 500K print run, so I was like, oh, this is going to be a book.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised to see here The Maidens, unfortunately, was not great. Didn't sell nearly well. Silent Page is the one people are still reading. Hardcover nonfiction, it's hard to remember because some of the way this happens is things that came out in 2020 at the end of the year, if they're popular... can then dominate 2021. And I'm looking at Cast. Isabel Wilkerson, right? 39, or sorry, what am I looking at here? 30 weeks on the hardcover nonfiction list. The other one that jumped out to me is The Hill We Climb, 16 weeks on the list. So that's just the poem, right, that they rushed out in April?
Just that single, exactly, the like slap it out, get it out.
Yeah, that's another one. We have the right-winger stuff, American Marxism, Killing the Mob. There's no one left to kill for Bill O'Reilly at this point. I don't know where we're going to go next, but I feel like they've had speculative killing things all around the go here. We've talked over time, Rebecca and I have, and I think we have editorially too, about how, especially when we started this show and then the site 10 years ago, diversity of in publishing the titles is a wildly different landscape. I tell you what's not a different landscape is the hardcover fiction bestsellers.
Yeah.
Of the top 10 that have been on the list the longest, only one by a person of color, The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett. And it needed a lot of acclaim and book clubs and awards to be the fifth longest run of 23 weeks. The other nine are Invisible Life of Addie LaRue, Midnight Library, Last Thing He Told Me by Laura Dave, The Four Winds by Kristen Hanna, Billy Summers by Stephen King, Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir, Malibu Rising by Taylor Jenkins Reid, Sully by John Grisham, and The Return by Nicholas Sparks. Shouts to Nick Sparks.
Just out here.
He's just out here selling books. He and the Grish. Doesn't yep. matter and moves units. There we go. Yep. And I guess I just want to say that, right? As much, yep. and this is one of the things I think that's hard to know is that it's incumbent, of course, on publishing, people that cover books, that buy books, that market them, to acquire, market, edit, and bring to the market books by people of color. But they are just one half of the equation, right? The other half of the equation, people got to buy the books, right? And you know this as well as anyone from working on the front lines of a bookstore. This is, I guess my theory, this is where most of the work still to be done is getting people then to buy the books that are now more available than ever. I still think there's marketing and other things to be done for sure. But a lot of ways the horse has been brought to the water. And I'm just wondering if that, what's going to take to get the horse to drink the water in a different kind of way? I don't know. Vanessa, any thoughts about that? Or I guess I'm disappointed to see still that to be the biggest of the big sellers, still got to be a white person, it looks like.
Yeah, I am a little of two minds. Like, I do think that, how are we going to get, like, more people to buy? But I also really do super just believe in that, publishing puts its dollars behind very specific stuff. And to be fair, I mean, Invisible Life of Addie LaRue is probably one that, like, I remember seeing in everyone's face. Some of these are just folks who've been around for a while. Like, again, Taylor Jenkins Reid is a kind of people. But there was obviously a lot of marketing dollars behind Malibu Rising, too. A lot of these, I mean, Kristen Hanna. It's one of those, like, every people just buy her books, and King just, and
they
Grish
buy
and
the
Sparks.
Books,
So to some extent, I'm still kind of in the, well, we need to just put more marketing dollars behind this kind of stuff in, like, the right way. And then the other part, is, like, how do we get more people to buy more of the books that aren't just these very particular faves? Like, how, and we do, you know, that's a nut I try to crack in my literal everyday job.
right. So, well, and I, you know, it's hard to know. I mean, I think that's why I say there's still foot to be put on the pedal from the supply side.
Let's
put
it absolutely.
On the demand side, that comment I just made about we could probably name the book talk top 10.
Yeah.
Any people of color in that TikTok top 10 that we could name off the top of their heads that we see incessantly all the time? I'd struggle, Vanessa.
I would struggle too.
And who's on that? That's on the racism embedded in all of us, none of us, you know, that kind of, it's everywhere and nowhere. But, like, that's where you really see it. It's like, is it a surprise that the top 7, 8, 9 titles we can all see get foisted on and then the algorithm gets picked up because everyone puts it on their thing?
I was going to say, that algorithm, and there's a lot to be TikTok algorithms too. There's
well, that's what I'm saying. Like, none of this is a level playing field still. And, like, the last battlefront in people's hearts and minds on the buy side. I think that's the real last battlefront. And it's going to take, I guess, a lot more time and more understanding of how these things work. But on the other hand, you look at nonfiction, it's kind of a different story. We get Zahner, we get
Wilkerson, obviously.
Isabel
Ashley
Wilkerson,
Ford.
We get Gorman, we get Ashley Ford. So I don't know what that's about. I don't honestly know why, which of those is the signal and which of the noise, and maybe you have to take them both at their time. But we don't have authors. We don't have Grisham. We don't have Sparks. We don't have Daniel Steele. We don't have a Stephen King person of color. They put out a book and they sell 100,000 copies.
Or
over the first couple of weeks. And they don't stay there for 17 weeks. Well, we do have one coming out. I didn't put this in there because we've kind of gotten away from new book coming out as being a story we do here.
Sure.
I think one that would be relevant here is Celeste Ng. One of the more bankable crossover literary commercial fiction writers.
Yep.
I wouldn't be surprised if her book coming out in October. Could it do Last Thing He Told Me kind of business?
I think so. Yeah,
I
think she's got enough of that crossover, like you said, and she's a bit between the people who came to her because of the adaptation, the people that came through her because the book was, books were buzzy.
Right.
It is, I think, very possible that we could see
and
that
both of her books have been done well on the bestsellers. People like them, and they seem to scratch whatever itch that is that, I guess the Last Thing He Told Me, that's a daughter of Gone Girl, or a granddaughter of Gone Girl, don't you think? The psychological thriller by a woman centering on women. That's an interesting one. Let's see. Other things here. The Duke and I by Julia Quinn from Avon. 17 weeks in trade paperback.
17 weeks?
That's not part of Bridgerton, right? Or is it? Is that a Bridgerton book?
That's a Julia Quinn. And it says right there, Bridgerton. And I want to say this might be the one that Bridgerton was... No. Is it the next one that's coming out?
I need to get my head around...
I watched the series too, but I had never read the books. Yeah, so like, and I want to say that this next chapter coming out might be one that's based on The Duke and I, the title. Yeah. I could be wrong, don't hurt me, but yeah, it is absolutely a Bridgerton book.
The other one that I think we're on author brand watch, like authors that are becoming brands. The other one that's on here for me is Emily Henry. People We Meet on Vacation, selling very well.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Beach Reads was great.
I think
great.
Now people are going to pick her up, right? She's now in...
And you do see that on TikTok now. Too.
Yeah, you do see on that TikTok, but it comes out of the J. Courtney Sullivan, Emily Straub summer like upmarket commercial fiction kind of realm. It's white women on lounge chair covers in cartoon form.
Pretty much.
Is like this genre. But now people are, and there's another one coming out, I think this May, called Must Love Books, which is just pandering for dollars, which, hey, get it. That's fine with me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rupi, she's on here, Homebody.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I forgot.
There she is, 22.
I actually just saw that book at Powell's and was like, oh, like I forgot.
Yeah, talk about a book that sells, but I don't see, I mean, we don't talk about it. We don't see people in our kind of how we think about books. It's not, she's got her followers, but she's like the John Grisham of Instagram poetry, and that's kind of stays there, and there's a lot of people there. Gorman's new book that came out this fall, I mean, it got a standing spinner display in Target. That's how big of a book a Gorman's book in. The other one we're going to see here is Atlas of the Heart from Brené Brand. That's not on here because it came out too late in the year to get on for it all. But Somebody's Daughter, I mean, debut, baby. I mean, I think the ones you got to say was Zahner and Ford.
Zahner and Ford, yeah.
I think those are the two that I'm really pulling out of. Can we break out and create some new stampable brand name recognition careers for folks? I'm really hoping. Because I think Britt Bennett now has two books out. And the first one, the second one sold better than the first.
Yeah.
Which I think is telling. But I really hope Ashley and Michelle Zahner, Ashley's been on the show, so I can call her by her first name, Vanessa. That's how it works. She's been on twice.
Totally, I know.
Yeah, and can I get a ruling on one question for you? My Hero Academia, Volume 28.
Oh, yes.
Should I know more about this? I know manga sells, and I've heard this title a lot, and I know it sells like gangbusters.
Sure does.
Is there something here for me, Vanessa? Is there something here for you?
I have recently decided that I need to know the same question because, every year I say that I'm going to just like take more time to read comics and manga, and again, all the books dominate so much of my thing, etc. But I edit obviously a lot of our on-site content. And
that's what I was going to ask you about. If you,
My Hero Academia is on many a list and sounds like a thing that if for no other reason just to kind of be in the know about the zeitgeist and about a very, very, very popular manga series, I need to know a little bit more about it. So I'm gonna start picking up the first couple, and apparently have 28 volumes to work my way through. So
here's what we should do. We should read together My Hero Academia Volume 1, but before we, and then talk about it, before we should do that, we should guess what it's about, because I have no idea. That title to me, I mean, I'm in. An academia hero? I don't know what this is. I know I see it a lot. It sells like gangbusters. So this would be good bonus content where you and I play guess what it's about and then read it and see how close we are. I have literally no idea.
Like,
I really
don't.
You could tell me anything, and I'd be like, sure, that seems plausible.
You're like, bananas on sale.
Yeah, right, whatever. Store. Yeah. I got everything else here. Let's see. Anything else from the... Do you want to do any publisher stuff on the top? I don't know what to say about which publishers had the most books and blah, blah, blah.
I mean, it's just interesting. Like, the just small, very obvious takeaway that we've talked about is that, you know, if PRH and Simon do become a happy family, it's like that list will just be dominated by their books, which is, you know, a thing. But it was nice to see some indie representation on there. Harlequin was really putting out a lot of... You know, numbers for HCs. Yeah, so it's stuff that we've heard, nothing super new, but it'll...
I think you're right to say that the top line is the top line. So maybe by individual imprint, that Ballantine versus Berkeley, like that's super insider baseball, and I barely care about it, and I care about insider baseball more than most folks on staff even. Yeah, certainly most. But if you look at the big five, which is maybe big four, asterisk, DOJ, DOJ, PRH had 38.3% of the bestsellers, caveat, caveat. Simon had was 12.8. So they were the third by a nose over Hachette. So together they'd be 50. And we've talked about PRH's market share before. And remember that backlist isn't showing up here.
Correct.
When you get to backlist and some other things, my understanding is that those things really balloon for PRH.
Yeah.
What's interesting, though, if you go to paperback front list, the big five share of the market actually shrinks. The big five share of hardcover is 89.1,
right,
which is huge. 79% of paperback. I think that's romance.
That's what I was about to say. And like when I mentioned Harlequin, that was absolutely what I was like. Okay,
but Harlequin is HC. Harlequin's HC, though.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I
think you're looking at like Andrews McNeil, like some of the other kind of stuff.
Andrews McNeil, for sure.
That shows up there. And then also the manga stuff.
Yep.
The manga stuff is not big five. That's Viz Media,
Viz Media. Mm-hmm.
They sell a lot of manga, but they're not something people know. I'm looking at trade paperback, just the top. We've got Celadon. Okay, that's Hachette, I believe. You drop down from there, Andrews McNeil, that's Rupee. That's not big five. Back Bay. Oh, Back Bay is. Back Bay is a big five. But then Rand McNally and Viz, right? So three of the 10 are not big five. Only American Marxism on the hardcover is not big five.
Is not big five.
And then all of the fiction bestsellers are big five, right? Tor is Macmillan. Vikings, PRH. Simon is Simon. St. Martin's is Hachette. Riverhead's PRH. Scribner's SNS. Ballantine is PRH. Ballantine PRH. Double A PRH. Yeah, so.
There you go.
That really makes their hay there. The bigger big news at 11, I should say there. I think in terms of the independent bestsellers, the notable streak was 22 for Norton. They had 22 positions on the list, which is the highest of the independent, except for Viz Media,
Viz,
112.
Which was, yep.
So 10 times the next highest. Well, actually, Andrews McNeil is 27. I'm partly. That's Rupee right there. But Viz itself, even with Rupee, Viz was quadrupling up on Andrews McNeil. So that's why, for those of you kind of, if you haven't been paying attention to manga and you're in this like weird position like Vanessa and I are, we know enough to know we might need to know about how huge manga is right now. That's where it shows up. It's the biggest selling non-big five imprint in terms of bestsellers by week. That's a huge deal.
It's huge.
And mass market paperback, Kensington, which they make real hay in, like, I don't know what you even call it.
There's a lot of cozies. There's a lot of...
It's paper mass markets and trades you buy on vacation kind of stuff.
Kind of,
yeah. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good top-level look.
They're smart folks.
Probably
on a dollar-per-dollar basis, in terms of what they pay to acquire their books, they probably make the most hay out of it. I'm surprised they haven't been acquired. I'm sure they've had offers to be acquired. Oh, look at that. It's 45 minutes, Amanda. We've already done it, and I've got... Now, I don't
and
know
you
what
also
I,
just look, called me Amanda, which is great.
I'm sorry. It's the A's. It's a guest host that ends in A's. You,
no,
Sharifa, and Vanessa all have the
exactly.
same vowel sound. I throw you on this. I'm so sorry.
No, that's why I'm laughing, is because it is a thing that has happened to me. Like, it always does on calls because we all end in A. It's fine.
I think I have to put... Rebecca and I need to figure out a way to cover this, because we've kind of gone through an era... We'd asked our listeners about covering censorship, book bannings, and things. And there was a little bit of a... It went back down to kind of normal. But now we're even... We've dropped down. It's like an Omicron. We dropped down below Delta, and then
it's
we're spiking way on top of it now.
Yep.
And it's all over the place. People, the brazenness. You know, we're now banning Mouse and Bluest Eye. Mm-hmm. This story I'll put in the show notes just to put out there. A mayor demanding LGBTQ books get... taken out of libraries, or is going to withhold the funding. Something I haven't seen. We're now out of the good old days of just parents squawking
Indeed.
To a board. I'm looking back on those fondly now, Vanessa. That's how
it's
bad
so
it's
sad.
Been now. So
and
I'm going
to
put a link in the show notes for a couple of those
there. Trying to pivot in that way, right? Where he's like, oh, well, it's parents. And everyone's like, is it?
And I thank you so much. Kelly Jensen put together an anti-censorship toolkit together for us. I'm going to put a link in the show notes there. Mm-hmm. we need to figure out a way to talk about this. I didn't want this to go without talking about it because it's important enough. I'm not even sure what else to say at this point, Vanessa. Your note was, I hate it here in general.
Yes.
Hard same for this kind of stuff, but it's really bad and it's getting stronger and more books are coming, more books are being taken away. Mm-hmm. Not that it was okay when it was just LGBTQ, but just like I say that, but the scope, Mouse by Art Spiegelman being banned, that was today's.
Yeah, today's big story.
The Bluest Eye being banned, not just taken off in a recommended reading list.
No, like it
taken
they
off
want
the shelf.
Yep.
Yes. I don't
Toni
know.
Toni Morrison. But, you're gonna pull her off
Toni
the
Morrison
shelf.
And Mouse by Art Spiegelman, maybe the signal achievement in comics, graphic novel. I mean, it's up there.
It's got a huge
right?
legacy, yeah.
It's a canonical work. Canonical works being pulled. I'm at a loss, and you guys can probably hear it from me right now, but I'm putting it there. Got to figure out some way to cover this, talk about them without just doing this flail that we're doing right now. But
maybe a
be
quick
aware.
Little liner is just that, like, we do cover censorship pretty much very frequently on the site now. So just to, like, put a head on it and not take too much of everyone's time. But we do have that censorship toolkit, which is a really, really great way for those of us that are sitting around, like, well, what do I do about it? Like, especially if you don't have kids, maybe you're not engaging with schools. But we all participate in libraries. So anyway, it's a really great comprehensive kit of ways that you can do that are both, like, some of them are relatively low effort and some are not. And then on Fridays, we unfortunately never have a dearth of content. There's always something to write about in the way of censorship. So if you're wanting to know how it's impacting your local communities, we have a censorship section that we cover on the site every week. So stay on top of it because it's getting pretty bad.
Pretty bad. Vanessa, I think we're going to wrap it up there. I have one story. Maybe Rebecca and I will talk about this. The Walrus did a long wrap-up on the idea of bibliotherapy, which I think... constitutionally, you guys, you and I are probably on the same vein of bibliotherapy is not therapy, but there is a, people are looking for books for something, which I agree. I think my take on this is not what people would think on the whole. So maybe we'll hold that in advance. Let's do 5 minutes on TikTok just for a second while we're here.
Got it.
You're on it a lot, mostly for food. I understand that. I told Rebecca this. I don't think I've said this on the air, but over winter break when I'm just lolling around, you know, we're not going anywhere,
I heard.
Omicron, I spend some time on TikTok. It's not for me, which is fine, which is totally fine. Why?
What an empty but pregnant pause.
That
was great.
People are having a lot of fun.
They are.
Congratulations to them. That's great. It really looks great. I'm not sure, and I'm being asked to think about this from publishing or think about internally.
Yeah.
It's moving units. I know it's moving units. I see that it's moving units. It's super influential in the world of books and reading. Is it for good or ill, Vanessa Diaz, right now? Or is it just a thing?
This is
how do you get your head around this? Okay.
Yeah, I think about this a lot, to be fair, also because it is also my job to think about this a lot as we're trying to, you know, think about how we make content and where and how and why. And it's a tough nut to crack that I think we're all going to, because I mean, in the beginning, I'll be very honest that if you had asked me this question and about a year and a half ago, I was like, it's a bunch of kids doing the same old dance to like Gwen Stefani and Beyonce mixed up. And in large part, that is still what TikTok is. But now we've got all these little subsets, and like BookTok in particular is such an interesting place because it sort of just feels like people giving really dramatic descriptions of books.
Yes.
And then again, that's how, like, and this is no disrespect to Colleen Hoover at all, but like that one is just, you cannot swing a cat and miss. Like, it's everywhere. And I'm trying to figure out like the for ill or for good part. Because it doesn't feel like the creators that I am seeing who are out here literally trying to highlight, like, no, these are really great books that I want to talk about for these, like, very substantial reasons, don't seem to have the views behind them that the people who are doing, like, a dramatic, you know, reenactment of, like, whatever trendy thing is, but then just making it a little bit bookish. And that's the part that I'm like, do I want to be out here doing the book in my hand? Like, I don't know.
That's what my caveat is. And I say this sometimes satirically that's great for other people. I don't mean that satirically here. This is fun for you.
Super.
Great. Have a great time. That's super interesting. I guess what I'm thinking more broadly about is like, you know, is there something for me specifically, but how durable this is? Because as you said, like, these same books are being talked about for like more than a year now. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like it's moved on, because algorithm feeds it. And then people know what the algorithm does, and people were very cagey about including this book and this hashtag, and it really feeds on itself. I guess I feel like the idea of short form video where people can be authentic is really cool. I think the thing that's making TikTok move units is the same thing I wish would go away, which is the winner take it all kind of mode of algorithm.
That
I wish it was different. I like the idea of it. People talking authentically. I think short form video is cool. I like the idea that the tools are cool enough now that you can see someone have a cool idea or do something interesting with the book. But the actual content being produced, to me, I did a couple weeks of looking at it, and I look at even just the icon on my phone. I'm like, I don't want to go back there right now. I'm just not interested in myself.
Don't make me.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. And I just, that's kind of where I am. And Danica and I talked about it for a long time on that show before. Mm-hmm. And that it's okay for other people and great for other people and not okay for me is totally fine. Please have fun wherever you want to have fun. But is this a new piece of the firmament, or is it a fad is too strong, but a wave, I guess, now that we all know this? Like, is it a spike in a wave? And are people still going to be buying a whole bunch of books off TikTok in a year? Maybe, probably. Are they the same books? If they are, I think that's a bad development. That's what I'd say.
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. It's like, especially because of the short form format, like, there's parts of that are really great, right? But I do think that because it is short form, unless you are going the full 3 minutes, and let's be honest, like, people's attention spans are such that, like, you're probably not always going the full 3 minutes.
Yeah.
You're giving what is ultimately a very, like, what's a quick-ass caption that I can give? Sorry, I just said that word. But that's, right. like, that, you know, will sell this book. And it's, like, the stuff that I feel I want to give like this really glowing review for is not a thing I can accomplish in a 15-second video. So no, I have to go for like the splashy, like, these people doing it on the beach, or, you know, whatever. And again, no shade, because I am a romance reader, but like, it's just,
well,
hard.
There's a reason podcasting is my favorite form for this.
Indeed. Because we get to sit here and
creator. Yes.
Yeah. Like, you know, talk. So we'll have to keep thinking about this because we do what we do, but I am.
Yeah.
To be determined, I guess.
I mean, it does seem like if you don't want to play the algorithm game, you're not going to reap the rewards of the algorithm, which sounds like obvious, but that is a trap, a content trap, I think, that's hard to fall into. I know there's people in the industry that listen. I'd love to know the success stories of books on TikTok that aren't like the 10 to 20 that we all know. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, then you don't know enough to comment. No, I'm serious. Yeah. Like, if you don't know what those are.
That's not a bad thing. It's just a thing.
That's not a bad. It's just true. But if there's like, there's this like or I don't even care if it's indie. It could be a big five book.
Yeah.
That's not one of the 15 or 20.
Yeah.
That somehow you can say, we think that we sold an extra 5,000 units this week because of it. I'd like to know that. I'd like to know that the coattails for TikTok are a lot longer than they are.
Yeah. That it's not like,
because that'd
line.
Be great. Yes. That's right. That's right. All right. Anyway, Vanessa, thank you so much.
Bookriot.com/listen
for show notes, podcast at bookriot.com. Go listen to us talk about witches on Adaptation Nation. We talk about William Shakespeare. Go get your winner preview draft. Vote for whoever you want to vote for. There's no electioneering here.
Wink implied.
Yeah. Look, I'm here. I'm not off. So, you know. I'm kissing babies this week, Vanessa.
Like petting kittens and kissing babies.
Vanessa, thanks for coming on. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Bye.